Throughout its history, America has been torn in two by debates over ideals and beliefs. Randall Fuller takes us back to one of those turning points in 1860 with the story of the influence of Charles Darwin's just published On the Origin of Species on five American intellectuals. Randall Fuller's new book, The Book That Changed America, looks at how each of these figures seized on the book's assertion of a common ancestry for all creatures as a powerful argument against slavery, one that helped provide scientific credibility to the cause of abolition. Randall Fuller is the Chapman Professor of History at the University of Tulsa, and we welcome him to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure as well.
What brought you to want to investigate Darwin and investigate that the book On the Origin of Species?
I've studied American literature and American history for a number of years, and I had always been under the impression that Darwin's book really did not make much of an impact over on this side of the Atlantic until after the Civil War. And I was reading a biography about Henry David Thoreau in which there was just kind of a throwaway line that said on New Year's Day, 1860, Thoreau had first encountered Darwin's landmark On the Origin of Species. And that's really what set me off to investigate the impact of the book on American culture before the Civil War.
Give us a sense of how the book was initially received in 1860 and how these intellectuals got a hold of it and then how it started to spread.
Sure. The book first came to the United States in early December of 1859, and it was sent overseas by none other than Darwin himself, whose good friend Asa Gray taught botany at Harvard. Asa Gray was so enthusiastic about the book that he lent it to a number of prominent intellectuals in and around the Boston area. And within weeks, Boston and New York intellectual circles were debating and arguing and discussing the book over dinner parties and at book groups and scientific gatherings. We tend to know the story about Darwin's book and the challenge that it posed to those who were religious. What we don't know so much about, and what I discovered as I was working on the book, was that in those first few months, Darwin's book was primarily discussed and thought about in terms of race, and especially slavery in the United States.
One of the things that is fascinating is how these various figures react to the book, and you write about Asa Gray and Louisa May Alcott both having a really hard time aligning Darwin's work with their own religious convictions.
That's exactly right, and one of the reasons that I wanted to stick to this relatively small cohort of early readers of Darwin was because I saw that they had varying reactions that really resemble the kinds of reactions that people have to this day when they think about or read or hear the name Darwin. Asa Gray was arguably the most respected scientist in the United States at the time he first received Darwin's book, but he was also a born-again Christian and a very devout Presbyterian who walked along Harvard campus with a Bible in the pocket of his coat. And while he understood that Darwin's claims made a lot of sense, and in fact he had helped contribute some of the evidence for those claims, he was also uneasy with the repercussions of those claims, and especially the idea that natural selection was a mechanism that created new species and didn't require a divinity, but could happen just in nature through physical processes.
Meanwhile, someone like Henry David Thoreau, you make the point, was perhaps the most profoundly affected by Darwin's work.
Yes, Thoreau in many ways is the hero of my book, because while we know the Thoreau who lived in the small cabin on Walden Pond and the Thoreau who went to jail because he wouldn't pay his poll tax in protest, we tend not to know as well the Thoreau, the self-trained scientist. And every day of his life through the 1850s, Henry David Thoreau spent at least 4 hours a day in the woods and the fields surrounding his native Concord, where he observed and took notes on all sorts of natural phenomena. He was also, an inveterate and omnivorous reader of works of science and natural history. So he was really prepared in a lot of ways when he encountered Darwin's book to understand the science behind that book. And once he read it, he began, and I make the case, to attempt to validate some of Darwin's claims about the way species competed for the same space over time. And my sense is that one of the great tasks he'd set for himself was to contribute to the new Darwinian science. But unfortunately, he died of tuberculosis about 2 years after reading Darwin's book, and so we don't know entirely what he was up to.
As you mentioned, the book initially came out with a discussion geared toward race. Give us a sense of Frederick Douglass's reaction and the conversations that were a result of reading the work.
Sure, and first, I should rewind a little bit to about the 1840s, so roughly 20 years before Darwin's book arrived. There was another dominant scientific theory about race that was especially prominent in the United States called polygenism. Polygenism was the idea that God, in his wisdom, had created every single species in its appropriate niche, and that those species were immutable. They didn't change over time. If he created a monarch butterfly, it was always a monarch butterfly. It would never alter after his creation. The American ethnologists, as they were called, made that same case about the human races, and in fact seemed to have regarded the races as almost separate species. So white people, it was believed, were created in Europe, black people were created in Africa, red-skinned people were created in the American continent. And the idea was that they were really separately created, they had never changed, they really weren't meant to intermingle with one another, and that's because they were created in different places, they had different attributes, so that, for example, white people were good at civilization, the argument went. Black people were better at hard labor in hot climates, the argument went. That was the predominant scientific notion about races when Darwin's book arrived on American shores. And one of the really most vigorous opponents of that theory, even before Darwin's book came, was Frederick Douglass, who gives this marvelous speech called The Claims of the Negro Ethnologically Considered, in which he says, science is being used here to justify an unfair system that enslaves black people.
You do include illustrations, advertisements, and cartoons in the book that are quite extraordinary, give you a sense of the reaction of the day.
That's right, and for me, one of the minor revelations when I was working on the book, I had been aware that Abraham Lincoln, who of course ran and became president in 1860, I'd been aware that he was often referred to as Ape Lincoln by his opponents, But it hadn't occurred to me that that had anything to do with Darwin's book or the Darwinian notion that humans were related to primates. And so what I found a number of cartoons about Abraham Lincoln looking like a gorilla or a orangutan.
The idea that this is the book that changed America, do you believe it's still changing us?
I certainly do. That is, Darwin's idea is no more static than many of the species that he studied, and as we learn more, as biologists learn more, as neurobiologists and all sorts of other scientists that Darwin couldn't have imagined learn more, our conception of Darwinian science changes. At the same time, much of the opposition to Darwin that I observe in 1860 is still very much with us, and Darwin's ideas are still contested in some quarters by religious groups, and I would even argue that some of the issues surrounding race that I discuss in my book are with us to this date.
Randall Fuller is the author of the new book, The Book That Changed America, How Darwin's Theory of Evolution Ignited a Nation. The book is published by Viking. Randall Fuller, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.